Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified. And today we have with us Greg Linares. What's going on?
So, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. So a bit about myself. I started professionally in cybersecurity way back in 2005, I believe, is where I joined. I was lucky enough to join EI Digital Security back in the day, where, if everyone remembers, they were the original rock star security group. I might have been one of the very last researchers there. I was actually hired and sat at Barnaby Jack's desk. So when he actually left. Yeah, so big shoes to fill. Rest in peace. Great team there. Lots of respect to everyone there. And I worked alongside a lot of the, like, the rock stars, like Derek Soder, Yuji Yukai, Andre Protas, Ryan, let's see, there's so many, like rock stars there. Lorenzo, who wrote, good old Retina and Blink, and Matt O, a lot of reverse engineering people. And, it's always good to remember, like, your roots, I think, because, a lot of those people, like before that, I was writing software. Actually, I was a developer for Massage Envy back when they had like 13 stores. I actually wrote their backend software. So I came from a software development place. I was just writing exploits and putting on malware. And then EI reached out to me. I didn't even know you can get hired for that kind of stuff.
And you can get hired for anything.
Yeah, it's true. and then since then I joined a lot of other places. I was at Cylance. I was principal software architect at Cylance. I was at Vectra, had lead research over there for research engineering. I was at CyberPoint. Now I work for a large venture capital. I'm in charge of cybersecurity for a large venture capital in the San Francisco Bay Area. And during that time, I've done almost every you know, possible point of cybersecurity you can imagine. I've done research engineering, I've done vulnerability discovery, reverse engineering of patches, software, hardware, threat intelligence, red teaming, blue teaming, purple teaming, black teaming, whatever you want to call things these days. It's been quite an adventure. I'm very, very lucky and happy to be here. It's still a very awesome community, very awesome, exciting job to this very day. And it's never boring. It's always fun.
Very cool. What's it like working for a VC where, as far as the outside world is concerned, they have unlimited budget, even though they're probably more fiscally responsible than most internally?
It's a very interesting question, because when I got this job is I used to be the red teamer, for about 6 years. And, since then I've watched them actually advance, and every year it was getting harder and harder. So, from a standpoint, their IT is extremely, like, some of the best IT people I've ever worked with work here, and they understood problems, and they had an extremely small cybersecurity group and team. And just watching them all get together and actually make huge changes throughout the years. And getting to the point where, I was still successful every year, with red teaming, but watching them advance and knowing that they actually cared about security, that was actually a good point for me to join with them. And working with a venture capital budget wise, resource wise, it's honestly like almost every other company out there. I mean, I've done a lot of threat intelligence for a large Forbes 10, 50, companies, and watching them handle securities, very similar to, venture capital. It's making sure that they identify their actual threat, and put appropriate resources behind them. And a big, working for venture capital, you have a lot of very interesting threats, because we deal with everything from bio to games, crypto. We actually do a lot, use some crypto. So, and in a lot of tech, of course. And so it's, as you can imagine, the threat landscape and the possibilities are endless. This is actually one of my first jobs to deal with what we call hybrid security, where we're dealing with both physical and actual, electronic standard, your typical cybersecurity. And we see those threats blended in together. So it's a lot of really interesting problems. And it's really fun still.
I've always thought that if a threat actor could get into the financial world, that would be their, I don't want to call it low barrier to entry, but that would be a really nice entry point, because they can come in. One vector of attack would be being an investor whose money is managed by any financial firm. So that gives you a certain level of insight into acquisitions, potential acquisitions of technology.
Yep.
And then you can follow that up with some type of cyber activity or social engineering or, anything to get in these days, because I would assume there are a lot more deals that don't get done that do, but the amount of data that they're collecting are the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting into what we call the playbook. It's pretty much the end goal for, I imagine, most of our threats. And it's absolutely a point of opportunity for many threat actors out there. You're also, like you mentioned, it's a great pivoting point for identifying deals, potential deals, and even picking up, technology stuff in there, because it's being evaluated by investors and investment teams and growth teams like that. So it's great. It's a great opportunity for attackers.
Well, especially if they want to step outside of tech. And I mean, us being in tech, we think that's the world, and everybody only wants to go after the newest technology as it relates to, I guess, cyber and computers. But you're talking biotech, agriculture.
Correct.
I think agriculture is one of the most slept on industries for cybersecurity.
Oh, absolutely.
Outside of the Monsantos and the guys who have real budget.
Yeah, absolutely. Those, I've worked for threat intelligence for some agricultural areas, and they absolutely have some very unique problems and very interesting threats that, I actually compare them similarly to hospitals, in the sense that they haven't realized that they were actually targeted. A lot of cases haven't realized that they were targeted by cybersecurity incidents, and they have a lot of areas of opportunity that aren't adequately secure. And a lot of them have been attacked successfully without them even knowing. And attackers have been in those environments for a very long time and exfiltrating data for years. It's been in cases I've seen.
Speaking of exfiltrating data, and this is one of my hot topics, so if you don't want to talk about it, you can just say shut up. We can move on and go talk about Scooter. For those of you listening, if you don't know what Scooter is, I have no words to express my disappointment for you. It's a band, but
almost wore a Scooter shirt. I was thinking it might have been a bit much. But yeah,
not at all, man. Like, you got 36 views on that video, and I'll post Greg's YouTube link in the description here. I probably account for 35 of them. I'm just,
that's fair.
That single video that you posted this morning.
But, they've been a guilty pleasure of mine since I was about 14 years old. Incredible. And they're incredible.
I will say what the Scooter songs through your video that I caught that you shared yesterday, the memories that it brought back and the happiness. I haven't felt that way in over a decade. So I thank you for that. And I don't want to get onto that too much, because this is supposed to be a cybersecurity thing. One of my hot topics that really bothers me in our industry is DLP.
Ah, yeah.
And Microsoft, in my opinion, had a pretty decent product that they sunsetted on April 1st of last year, which was Azure Information Protection, and completely screwed the pooch with whatever it is now.
I am very familiar, painfully familiar.
I actually got the previous iteration to work, and it worked pretty well. I don't want to say it was great, but what are your thoughts on the industry moving to some better type of DLP to deal with data that's been exfiltrated?
To me, DLP is in the same area as AV and ERVs and you know, everything else at this point, where it's a cat and mouse game. And I have spent a lot of time demonstrating how bad DLP is, and because there's millions of ways to exfiltrate data. And I was just recently involved in a project, and I'm painfully aware of how these products, and I was evaluating multiple, and how they, you know, even running two or three of these on top of each other, they don't provide adequate ways for your attacker. Like, attackers are going to get data out. And I do not think it's great to have, you know, the protection and layers. Your defense and layers. And that's what I see it as. Your DLP is not going to be the thing that generally says, you know, hi, I'm here. I found the problem. You need to have different layers in place to find attackers pivoting initial access, moving around your network, moving around your devices. And then finally, you know, your attackers exfiltrating data. And you know, when your DLP actually triggers off, attackers have already won, honestly. Usually that means that if they are at that point and your DLP fires off, in my experience, the attackers have already, they've already compromised multiple devices. If they didn't get that data, which your DLP stopped, they're going to quickly move on to another way to get it out. Yeah.
You know, the way I look at DLP isn't necessarily to stop the actual loss of the data. The way I thought about it was, and going back to 365, because that's where I live, the former version of Azure Information Protection. Okay, you take my data, I go in, I adjust the settings for that sensitivity label to hopefully render it useless to you.
Yes, that is
it's almost like an assumed breach posture, I would say.
Exactly. And that's the absolute best way to handle and to operate with your DLP, is to adjust your labeling and adjust your containment options in it, so that it does make your data effectively useless to the attacker. Sorry about that. I was supposed to turn this on Firebreak.
That's all right. Life happens.
Yes. There we go. So as I was just saying, attackers, you know, getting your data out is obviously bad, but you know, segregating data, labels, compartmentalizing, and you know, for me, in where I work, we do with almost like a lot of security labeling, as well as like your privilege levels. And so I think that's a huge deal to make sure that, you know, your users get the appropriate access, and making sure that if people in XYZ compartment, you know, in department don't have access to data they don't need, and an attacker pops their box, that's honestly, if I can recommend that for most shops, that's a huge deal. Like, I can't tell you how many places I've red teamed, and even though I popped, you know, someone in accounting, I was able to get access to data that was not related to accounting, just because that someone complained one time and they gave them permissions to some share or something like that. And that is honestly, it's always like, I think one of the best things that's been added recently is timed access to a lot of these DLP and protection data, you know, data protection services, as we're, because as administrators, I see it so many times where exactly that condition where employee requests access for something or needed access for something, they got access and it never was revoked, and attackers exploit that many, many times.
Have you ever seen DLP attached to PAM?
Yes. I wouldn't say it's the successfully or a the best method, but I think at that point, it's just too many layers attached to each other, and too many options. The noise level gets too high at that point, and it gets lost a lot. And so, I would say yes, but not successfully, I guess. Okay. Yep.
Just before we hopped on here, I saw a tweet from VX Underground. Those guys put out some pretty nice stuff.
I'm a huge fan.
And I've been using a product that I never knew was hosted in Russia.
Oh, yes. Anyone. Yeah. And it's funny because I received a lot of DMs this morning about the same issue. Was we've been sending all our analysis to individuals in Russia. And yeah, some of us did know. And
I was absolutely clueless.
Yeah. It's interesting because we have a team whose sole job is to literally identify where resources are for every third party that we use and evaluate. And they've been working overtime, as you can imagine, for the last couple of weeks. And currently, Anyrun's not a product that we use. But I remember when they came out with, they always come out with a cases product, and we have, multiple other companies to switch to and to evaluate or to compare. And I remember when we were looking at sandbox options, and that was, they came up there and it was listed as Russia. And I was like, oh, did not know that. And so, yeah, when it came up again this morning, it was a reminder. Great service, though. I honestly, they put out a solid product, and it's unfortunate that they're dealing with current events and that many people are going to have to switch over, move, migrate, or hopefully they get past Russia, the great Russian firewall or great Russian disconnect. But
there's always a way around.
Yep.
We're all pretty well aware of that these days.
Yes. Yeah.
Being a pen tester or a red teamer, were you a pen tester?
I've been both. I have done a lot of pen tests in my career. Before I was even in professional cybersecurity, I was doing pen tests for friends who were running cybersecurity companies all the way since 2001 or two.
I can only imagine
I can remember my actual very first pen test was a law firm, and we get in there and, I'm finding default passwords everywhere, scanning everything back in the day with super scan and Nessus, back in the day, Nmap straight up. Nmap, I can't remember the old school version. I think Windows was, barely ported over by Ryan at that point. I could be wrong, but I just remember it was a super scan and using all kinds of packet tools with GUIs that they don't even exist anymore. But we were there, and we found out that the IT guy there was actually hosting a torrent of movies inside the law firm, and then was taking all the all the cease and desist notices from everything you can imagine. He was like Napster back in the day, and he was taking all the cease and desist notices from the mail and hiding them. And and then he actively tried to, block our investigation, of course, and we found it, and we showed the owner of the law firm all the evidence, and then he was arrested on site. That was literally my first pen test was getting someone fired and arrested. Wow. And probably the worst case, results of a pen test you could possibly have.
The reason I ask about you being a pen test or a red teamer, if we go back to the beginning of COVID, everyone said, not everyone, a lot of people in the IT world/cybersecurity said, okay, everyone's work from home. Let's forget about the perimeter. Let's just guard the identity. What are your thoughts on that? Because
100%. Okay. I'm a believer of that. So I'll be quite frank. Since COVID has created such impact and work from home is now working at the office effectively, I have seen attackers go after the individual at this point. Attackers who were making the effort to actually attack offices. And as I mentioned, we see a high level of sophistication in attacks. And a lot of this is hybrid attacks where physical devices are dropped off, physical attacks are leveraged. And we started seeing those attacks against homes of individuals, devices being planted, devices being mailed to people as an Amazon package. We saw attackers targeting home network devices. I just recently was involved in analysis of a building.
I wanted to ask you about that because I saw the tweet.
That was a huge deal. That originated from a good friend of mine. They were experiencing very interesting events on their laptops and on their router, and they changed ISPs multiple times. And this individual has worked with internet privacy in the past. They work for very well-known companies and groups that do internet privacy, so they have a unique threat model. And when they first started describing it, I was like, I wasn't sure if it was an actual attack. It just seemed like hardware failure or maybe neighbors causing, interference with networking. And we spent a couple of weeks looking at packet dumps and reverse engineering, a lot of interesting conditions on their router, and taking out, looking at logs. And we got a brand new router in there, and we watched it get popped. We watched attacks leverage on there. And then we started looking further, noticing it was the in-building switches to this area. It's downtown San Francisco. And we noticed the building and the switches inside of it were popped, and attackers were actually leveraging attacks, actively editing networks, editing LANs, moving themselves into local areas, and getting access into home users' devices, all in network. The network was completely flat at random points of the day, where so the attackers can move around and intercept and do man-in-the-middle attacks.
Was this a building with a rental building or like a condo co-op?
It's interesting because the company that owns this building does both, and we were able to validate that on both kind of facilities that this attack was being leveraged. And so yes, this is a condo facility, and the people there, I went through the building directory, as a red teamer I am, and grabbed all the names off the building directory and started looking. And there's quite a bit of individuals who work in tech, and very, very well-named, well-versed companies in San Francisco, and any of them could have been ideally targeted by this.
Or all.
Correct.
And they're a big funnel take. Yep. And yeah, start on a way for later.
Yes. That's, the dragnet. A lot of attackers will collect all this data, and then later, if someone becomes more famous than they are now, it's a blackmail from, 6-7 years ago.
And I get those emails on my Gmail almost daily. We have video of you doing bad things. And I'm like, you know what? Go ahead, release it.
Let's go.
Pornhub pays $5,000 if you don't show my face, $15 if you do. Either way, I'm good. But the reason I asked if it was a rental or a condo is, it's kind of moot, but I'm assuming the building just provided free internet, or internet included with the rent, or internet included with the CAM fees to make
that
it
is
more attractive to
actually
or renters.
Not in that case. And the building had basically allowed you to plug in. They partnered with a couple of ISPs in the area. They didn't provide it, or at least on my friend's lease, it wasn't provided. You can choose between several of the ISPs here, and but the building, they provide the in unit Ethernet cable or Ethernet plugs. And so, everyone who's using those was likely affected.
I'm assuming it's a newer building if there's Ethernet in there.
Correct.
What about the ICS controls? Was it all on the same?
Yes. And there was evidence of individuals looking at KNX protocol. If anyone's unfamiliar, here's my free tip for all of you. If you're unfamiliar with KNX protocols and you've never had a fun project to do and you wanted to get involved into ICS, building controls, HVAC controlling, look into KNX. It is a terrible mess. I wanted to do talks on it for several years. But unfortunately I just hadn't had the time. KNX devices are actually affordable now. You can get about, okay. So affordable is a relative term. They used to be like multiple thousands of dollars. You can get them for like $400 for starting, and you can play with them. They control everything from HVACs, elevators, fire control systems, doors, windows. And this building does have them. And there was absolutely a KNX protocol, being thrown out, and we saw individuals attempting to look at it. So that was always fun and exciting.
You know, one of the cool ways of, I hate to say it this way, but I don't know how else, one of the cool ways of abusing an ICS system in a residential building or a corporate building is you're forcing a service call to bring an individual on site. And I'm assuming you being in cybersecurity, you probably have a good understanding of what you have at home, where it is. But the average person who works in an office, now that they're working from home, if someone has to come in, they have corporate assets strewn all over the place, and they probably don't even know what they have outside of their laptop.
It's true. Absolutely. We were talking about that kind of attack, and you have the malicious maid, you know, involved in that as well, where a unit says, you know, they trigger an alarm on a unit, and now after they go fix the unit, you can later do a physical attack with the front desk probably and say, hey, I was hired by this individual, or, you know, contract, but this individual to go into this unit to go check for that call that happened or that issue that happened. And I've used similar attacks in red teaming before. I do a lot of hybrid red teaming where physical is absolutely part of the game. And let me tell you, you have a clipboard and you have a ladder and you have a uniform, that'll get you to 9 out of 10 buildings or nine.
And a CAT card, even if it works or not.
Yep. Yep. That's yep. Exactly. Yep. Yep. Or a fob that steadily.
There's this vendor, and I don't want to name and shame. They are giving out these free network scanning devices.
Okay.
To AV installers, IT people, say, hey, we're giving this to you for free so you can map your client's networks. Just drop it in.
Oh no.
Personally, and these things are pervasive on my side of the industry, that's putting a jump box in to people's location.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone in for assessments. And assessments for me are typically, they want to get a new IT provider. So we go in, we do our song and dance, we look the inventory. And for the most part, we rip and replace. We do everything our way, whatever that means.
Yep.
But I can't tell you how many of these devices we found. I have them in a closet over there.
That's
just sitting because I don't even want to take the chance to look at the data coming up, but I'm pretty sure it would be interesting. And if you want one, I'd be more than
awesome. That's a great talk. That would be an ideal talk at any conference. I would
if you want offline, give me an address and I'll mail it to you. Done. I'm telling you, don't plug it in at home.
I'm an individual who runs, I have two ISPs at my house. I have a 30 ISP and I have a clean ISP, and I run everything like that from the 30 ISP. And let me tell you, I've had some interesting hardware assessments in the last year that I worked for venture capital. It's everything from random GPS devices being found in attached to things to exactly what you said, device that was found in a company that was being invested in, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, what's this? We don't know what this is. Okay.
when you do these assessments for companies that are being invested in, because I'm noticing a trend here that when a private equity firm, VC, or any of those big financial guys, or the firepower, those financial guys, they tend to do real assessments now of IT systems because they don't want to inherit risk with an investment.
Absolutely.
Is that something that you guys do internally for the companies your employer is looking into, or do you outsource that stuff?
Well, it's internal only. And we do everything from evaluate source code, evaluate software, evaluate ideas. You know, obviously, the tech, no one wants to invest in the snake oil. And a lot of companies are getting better and better at marketing snake oil, and even to, you know, VCs who are looking to invest. So a lot of things I do is look into, hey, is this actually real? Is this real? Does this actually work?
Or is it white labeling someone?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. or is it stolen tech? That's another one. That's actually comes across more often than you think, where has this been done before? And that company is like a stealth company somewhere else. And they've, you know, taken this idea and they're just the loudest people about it.
I have a question for you. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So based on stolen tech, if you brought that up, I can't not ask you about NVIDIA. Those two certificates.
NVIDIA and Samsung. Everyone's
Samsung
looking at NVIDIA.
Today, yeah.
Samsung is the, I can't say what's in the Samsung dump, but everyone needs to look at it. There's some juicy gems in the Samsung one. And it's not just for mobile devices and their products. There's potential for a lot of interesting devices in there. I mean,
in my internet connected monitor that I'm looking at and my internet connected TV.
Oh yeah. the Knox, there's a lot of stuff for Knox on there. So that's always interesting and fun. Everyone, if you haven't, I did a tweet this morning. If you haven't looked at that Samsung one, go spend some time on it. It's much larger than NVIDIA, but yeah. And like you were saying, the NVIDIA one with the stolen certificates. Stolen certificates isn't a new problem. I've been yelling about stolen certificates for quite some time. Matter of fact, I won't name and shame, but there's a terrible AV company who's magically their certificates get stolen.
Stop talking about Webroot like that. I don't know if that's who he was talking about. That's just my, there are two companies I really, you know what? I don't not like Webroot, but Kaseya is the other one. Not a fan of what they put out.
It's actually neither of those. But the other company has a shell office in I believe it's Boston, and they're a foreign company. But I can't tell you how many times that their products with malware signed with actual active drivers, you know, drivers and certificates stolen from them, and it's used in targeted attacks. A lot of those attacks do not come to the light of day, unfortunately.
Did you see that recently it came out that Russia or Russian hackers used a legitimate front company and paid them to buy a legitimate Cobalt Strike license for them?
Absolutely. And it's, we're going to see, maybe not all of us will see, but a lot of us did raise our hands. I have a couple of groups that I'm part of, and we're all X or current threat intelligence big fans, and we do a lot of everything global threat intelligence. And these are attacks that we have seen, and methods that we have seen. And it's interesting whenever one of these things comes to the light of day, because then it's like, oh, we can actually talk about this, or someone can talk about this. And that is a tactic that a lot of people are, you know, it's the bribe packets that we're seeing. To go along with this, so a lot of the ones that we have personally have seen are the SIM card related bribery access, and where individuals threat actors have individuals on the inside of ISPs and cell phone providers and those, and they pay them large amounts of money to SIM swap and do those and get access to those, or to have an engineer on the call, have someone call in as X, Y, and Z customer and for that engineer to overlook certain protections in place. And that is absolutely a tactic that's being used.
That's actually pervasive in Dell with their call centers out of India.
As someone who actually had a attack on their own Dell account, it doesn't surprise me. I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, someone put $5,000 of hardware on my Dell account, and calling up Dell, they were like, "Oh yeah, they validated everything as you." And I was like, "I can't even validate this data myself. Like, I don't even this is like stuff I don't even use anymore." And I'm one of those people who, you know, mother's maiden name has like six numbers in it, random,
You're not actually using real information.
No, ever.
And people just sign on Facebook.
Yeah, no. Yep, that's it. Let me tell you, if you're an average user, listening in on this, one of the things you can do is, the easiest thing you can do is do not use real information and make up your information and keep it stored and memorized and looked up somewhere else.
I keep it in my password manager. So yep. For that record under the notes section.
Yep.
Yeah, it's plain text in there, but at least it's
better than a
supposedly encrypted.
Yeah, they usually are. There's been a lot of good researchers have looked at a lot of these. They're generally pretty good.
What's your go-to password manager? Top three
I'm a LastPass. I'm a LastPass kind of individual, but all the other ones are all. In my opinion, it's just who you invested in, who you put your current effort, what UI you like better, what features you like. Honestly, I don't care which one you use as long as you're happy and you actually use it. That's why I tell all my users, like, you can use any of them. As long as you actually use it, you're happy with it, and allows you to get your job done. So,
okay. What kind of trends are you seeing in the industry these days in terms of attacks and threats coming out in the last, let's say, 2 months since the year started?
Yeah, like we talked earlier about hybrid attacks where attackers are not attacking the office anymore. For blue teamers out there, let me tell you, in the last 6 months, we have seen attackers dropping off devices outside your C-level's offices that are attacking their Wi-Fi, that are intercepting their devices. They're everything from pineapples to, hack RFs and other things, and they're using those to man middle to deploy exploits. We've seen attackers literally portray as ISPs coming in and replace hardware. That is absolutely, your ISP. We heard that you're having issues. Person says, "Oh, I don't remember scheduling something today." Of like, maybe it was your husband, maybe it was your wife, someone else.
No one wants to lose internet.
No one wants to lose internet, and especially when you're working from home, and they go in and full device replacement, and with the router, they give them a new password and they say, "Hey, this is your new password. You can log in," and they have their DNS change. That's the easiest one. Their DNS is somewhat, modified and goes somewhere else.
How are you guys securing, or how would you recommend securing a work from home laptop? I mean, using the identity, I guess.
Yes. Zero trust, as much as a buzzword, that is lately. It is assume all devices are insecure until you can validate security. VPNs, absolutely. Everything has to be. And make sure it's hard trust to be a VPN or whatever term they call it these days. If the user cannot connect without a VPN, that then they don't connect. We've seen attackers downgrade or stop the VPN access, and a lot of policies is like, if VPN fails 3 or 4 times, it connect anyways, because no one wants to disable work. We've seen attackers use.
How do you force that hard trusted VPN for cloud or SaaS assets?
That is
on-prem. It's easy, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, exactly. You're at the mercy of the cloud, as we have the symbol of the cloud that we use here. And almighty cloud gods, whatever options they are, without revealing what cloud systems we use, I really can't say. But I know ours has an option, for that. I can't say that all of them do. But
that's dependent on the end SaaS product, right?
Correct.
Just using Salesforce as an example.
Correct.
they have to be able to integrate and work with, let's call it, some kind of broker gateway.
Yes. And when you deal with all this, you have to make sure all the components all the way, support this. And then you have your other, you know, the other technology like Okta and stuff like that. If you're getting real fun, you're getting your cloud, based 802.11x certificates, which is, that's a fun environment. If no one's ever set one of those up,
I haven't done one of those in probably 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe 20 years. Now it's all a very weak pre-shared key that people can easily regurgitate, which is pretty bad.
Yeah. There's 802.11x certificates and identities over the cloud exist. That's an option. And I've been to multiple shops that have actually got rid of entire Windows domains, because that was like the last thing that they needed was to get your 802.11x certificates based off your domain information. You can all set up the cloud now. So yeah, it's really interesting being environments where there's no Windows domain.
Now, are they using something like an Azure AD?
Nope.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
This is just, we're talking about, I guess, something like an Okta being an IDP?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And that's interesting. That's fun and exciting. Let me tell you, it provides different type of threats and different type of models, but it exists and it's possibility now.
Well, it's catch up, right? The attackers have to play catch up to exploit something of that nature, whereas Azure AD is pervasive throughout the world at this point.
Let me tell you, watching attackers get into one of these environments and then all of a sudden looking for certain things that do not exist, you can just imagine the operator on the
more Kerberos tokens.
Yeah, they're like, where's all this information? Well, how does this work? What do I do here? That's actually been seeing active attackers in those environments and literally stopping and then like an hour later just bailing out because they're like, I don't know what to do here.
That's an interesting concept, because now, as you said, you're to live off the land. What you're used to living off of doesn't exist.
Yeah, you can tell. You can literally watch an attacker run their script that they've done for the last 20 intrusions that they've done for the last month, and all of a sudden nothing happens, and they're like, what? You can tell that the operator goes back, runs it again, then looks at over the output, and you can tell that they talk to like another co operator, and they're like, oh, run these three commands, and they run those three commands, and they're like, this domain is different. I don't know what to do here. And then it is bail out. I've actually watched that happen in real time. It's been pretty interesting.
I do agree with protecting the identity. I think it's very important, especially when everyone's using SSO and
versions of
these days. So it's one key to the kingdom, so to speak. But I've always had this thought in my head, okay, you can protect the identity, but you should also be protecting the network. Because if they can get onto the device, they can go pull tokens, they can pull what they need to escalate.
Yes. And like a lot of environments that I'm familiar with have not just, computers, and you have your printers, you have your IoT devices, everything from devices that manage like meeting management. IoT devices is something I've seen a lot of environments, and those are being targeted a lot. It's like imagine your conference room and you have those devices outside the conference room that
VoIP devices, I've always said, are the easiest way to get in. They haven't been updated since they were sold from the factory.
Yes. Or even, bought from your already compromised sales group that's been
buy it on eBay because it's cheaper.
Oh yes. Let me tell you, there I followed a group that specifically was doing that for several years, and we were purchasing their devices to identify what they were implanting in them and then release into groups. It's the same for intelligence teams that I've been talking to, that we reverse engineered those type of attacks for many years. And that's absolutely a thing. We've seen it at certain Best Buys where they've compromised whatever Best Buy is purchasing at, and these Best Buys will wear large companies in the area around them go buy their USB devices or such.
USBs are, I will say 2 or 3 months ago, across all of my clients, we only allow USB whitelisting. So if it's not whitelisted, it's not getting access to the systems. And that goes for keyboards, mice. And
I was going to say, does that do your hardware too? Yeah.
Everything. Like, because
all the advice.
What precipitated this, and I don't want to put this company in this, but I think it was Razer or one of those companies a few months ago had an issue where you can escalate through their installation.
Yes. Yep.
So,
another free tip for everyone who's listening. Look at your gaming peripheral companies. They are, lots of vulnerabilities in those, lots of, I've only recently looked at them. I stopped because it was, everything was bad. But it's not just Razer. It's a lot of the gaming companies. They are all of them. Hey, a gamer just wants their microphone, their mouse, their new mouse, their new monitor, you know, to work right out of the box. And there is, there's a lot of terribleness in those.
Oh, I can imagine.
A lot of privilege escalation, a lot of them write to app data or, you know, or insecure folders, get their updates at that folder. And you can, the easiest one I say a lot of vulnerabilities is they get their updates, put it to that folder, and you just do a replacement of that before the actual update installs. Game over.
It's a scary world out there.
Yep.
I mean, yep. When you really start looking at what you're plugging into, it gives you time for pause. So
it's hard to be secure these days. It's hard. And it's not even anything, no matter what you're doing, it's always like, you always have to look at what's there. It's like, is it the cloud provider whose employees are accepting bribes from attackers to get to your data? That was an actual attack. I saw very much during the beginning of COVID where, a certain domain provider who is terrible and you should never use for them. They definitely don't have two letters or two words, combined as one, for their company name. They are terrible, and they had employees who absolutely accessed your data and then, changed your data and gave that information to third party attackers and, let people change domain systems and such like that. That's an attack. That's an attack vector.
You know, there's a buddy or a colleague that I have, every time he signs up for a service, he creates an alias for them. So let's say you had a company, it would be laughingmantis@hisdomain.com.
Yep.
So when stuff comes to that email address from not from you or your company, he knows it's either been sold or breached.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I laughed at him for years for that, but now I see the brilliance and the genius in it.
Yeah. And like the other thing is like what you do is like, for instance, with your providers, like if you're signing up for a company that provides something to install in your clients, never put your actual real client list up there. Make your lookup list, like a translation list. Like, let's say, you know, you have your C level, it's actually named Jim on there. And then when you put it in your third party client list, for that to look up, don't put his real name in there, put their alternate name in there. So you have a translation list locally for that. I can't tell you how many times these third party providers get popped and then the attackers are like, oh, I know who C level is. I know where they're all at. I can look this up now from this third party.
But I mean, most of that's already out there thanks to Experian with their,
or the OPM hack, which everyone seems to have, you know, OPM hack was huge for many, many individuals.
People have a very short memory for a lot of these hacks and breaches. And, you know, I saw something this morning that Chinese hackers are just scraping the forums for as much data as they can get. And they're just putting it into these databases and collating and waiting for opportunity at this point.
Absolutely. That's something they've been doing for quite some time. And it's the level of effort that attackers portray and use, doesn't even surprise me anymore. I have seen a lot of shocking, levels of effort, and I've seen a lot of shockles of effort, attackers have done. And it's always fun and exciting.
That's it. You know, I always say there's a low barrier to entry. and people make it really easy for anyone to get their info. So, and so they want to stop doing that, we're going to have a lot of these problems. So,
yes. Yep.
But yep. We are coming up on time, and I do want to be mindful of yours. Anything else you want to close out with?
I don't know. It's for blue teams, red teams out there. It's hard. Purple teams, whatever team or color of the week you want to be. There's a lot of resources there. We have, at this point in CyberScare, there's never been more a better time to have resources. It's really awesome that the community is coming together. There is a lot of attacks going on there, and a lot of it is in the things that you're going to be seeing. That's not the forefront of the news. A lot of people are, focusing right now currently with Russia attackers, and the Ukrainians, Russia-Ukrainian conflict. Your attack is not going to come from there, and attackers are absolutely using that smokescreen to roll out what they're doing. So remember, the loudest attack and the loudest noise isn't where the attack is going to come from. The little bit attackers are going to absolutely use that for their smokescreen.
Sounds good. Well, I'd like to thank Greg for coming on today. And if you guys have any questions, he's on Twitter at @laughing_mantis. And go check out his YouTube channel. If you ever need some good high energy music and some videos that go along with it, highly recommended.
And thank you.
Link will be down in the description.
Thank you
all. Very much.